your hands, everybody, if you got what it takes. Cause I'm KRS and I'm on the mic and premieres on the breaks.
Mariam Tazi.
What's up, Malcolm?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Well, welcome to the program. I had my podcasting voice. Did you hear it for a second?
Little bit.
I brought it. I was going up it. Yeah, a high pitch. I got to watch that. So, welcome to the program, everyone. American Riddle. This is your boy, Malcolm Riddle, coming at you. Another ice cold day in the Washington, D.C. area, which sucks, but we're here and we're going to get down. We have a special guest today calling in. We have Mason Pryor. You guys know about his father, the iconic stand-up comedian, the one and only Richard Pryor. You know, he's influenced everybody that I know. And if you don't know, like, there's some people that don't know who Richard Pryor
is. That's crazy.
You know what I mean? It blew me away. I was at work the other day, and I just went around in a circle.
The youth.
Asking. Yeah, the youth is lost today.
They don't get it.
And the older I'm getting, the more pissed I'm getting.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
I know.
And it just blows my mind, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Teach them, educate them.
I do. I drop science.
Exactly.
I'm telling you. I told you what I did at work. I put Richard's face up all over every screen on every computer and had to do it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I got Mason Pryor, son of Richard Pryor, who I know nothing about, knew nothing about up until maybe a week or two ago. Connected via social media, which, Mariam, you know.
That's awesome.
I love social media, and I like using it the right way to connect with people.
Yeah.
And connected with Mason, and one thing led to another, and got him on the horn today. So, Mason, welcome to the show.
Thank you. What's going on with you guys?
Man, like I said, trying to educate people and not just educate them. You heard me talking when I was setting the show up, just the youth today. Know nothing about that. They know little about stand-up comedy,
yeah.
But also just about the history. It could be anything. It could be movies. It could be music. Don't get me started on music. But when it comes to comedy, and you know, I was just asking around, they had no clue who Richard Pryor or what he stood for in the world of comedy and film. The two.
Right.
So it's mind-boggling to me. You know,
it's a shame. You're right about that. My generation, you know. I mean, I'm part of it, so I'm not going to badmouth them too much because I'm one of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, but the thing is, I'm sure that the fact that you recognize it, some people go through it clueless.
Only reason I know Richard Pryor is my father. It's like, it'd be a little awkward if I didn't know nothing about him. And it's like, man, I don't know nothing about that nigga except that I look just like him. Like, what?
Yeah, so you have an audience here that, meaning the world, that has very little knowledge of their history. Especially, you know, I find it mind-boggling when it's brothers and sisters that don't have an idea. And it doesn't have to be Richard Pryor, but it could be, you know, MLK. It could be Malcolm X. It could be anyone. And they're just focused on the here and now, you know.
Yeah, it's the Google era, man.
Yeah, well, they need to use Google. You know, they need to start Googling some real shit. That's the way I look at it. Yeah, and that's what I did. That's what I did with you, because I had no idea. I knew that your father, Richard Pryor, had children. I just didn't know exactly, you know, what they were into. So I was just doing some, you know, I think I was just web surfing something and stumbled upon you. And then why don't you tell us? Tell us, like, you know, where you're from, where you grew up at, all that good stuff.
Okay, yeah. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. I mean, I guess you should do the backstory of how my parents met and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
They met in Los Angeles, California. He was actually filming JoJo Dancer. As everybody knows, who knows my father. My father was a comedian and all that, and he started doing acting and everything. And came up, so he did JoJo Dancer years later, later on in his career, under his own studio. He actually casted my mother to be in the movie as just a stand-in and an extra. They got to talking. I'm not really sure what they were talking about, but obviously I popped up, so it must have been something good. Conversation must be real good.
Yeah, JoJo Dancer was a film. It was a biopic of Richard's life, And yeah, that was later on in his career when he did that. And yeah, that's a good way to meet people, I guess, through film and on the set. You know, unbelievable when it comes to his life and everything that he did, you know, before JoJo Dancer.
Yeah, he had already recorded so many comedy shows, did so many movies. Really, even with Richard's career, it was kind of split, kind of like pre and post The Fire. Before The Fire, you know, he was doing a lot more than when he did afterwards. When he got a little older, he just started changing stuff up. He did the actual biopic under his own production company and everything. He was starting to try to branch out a lot more. His comedy even changed and everything, man. So it was just, it's kind of like he lived in that rock star life in the 70s and the early 80s, 60s.
Yeah, it was off the hook. I mean, it was mm-hmm. it was different, much different than now. And for him as an African American to do the things and reach the level that he did, I mean, that's game changing in itself. I mean, he flipped.
It's hard to even tell. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It's still, even, you know, talking to people my age, it's kind of funny because it's like I'll let them watch my father back then, and it's almost like you miss it because of the time period. This is the generation now where, you know, reality shows, people acting like buffoons and going crazy, so it's no big deal. But back in the day, to hear things, some of the stories Rich did outside even just comedy, like when he was in Vegas and he pulled his thing out and was talking about some blackjack, you know, that was just like unheard of. You know what? A man pulled his dick out? Like nowadays, it's like, ah, you know, so what, you know? So it's like, it's that whole thing, even with me doing comedy, trying to stand up and, you know, do stuff that, you know, have that shock as he did in a generation that has no value of morals or, you know, any shame.
So yeah, we're like desensitized.
Yeah. Because yeah. There's so much going on. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. YouTube, that changed my life when I was about 11 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 26.
Okay. Now, taking us back to your parents meeting, were they married?
No, they were not married.
Were you so when you were born, when did you get that idea? Did you ever get the concept of who your father was and what he meant to the world at large?
I didn't get it until I was older.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, when my parents split up, the reason, even, you know, I'm going to talk to you guys, even the reason why they didn't get married, during the time he was dating my mother, he was also dating my brother, my other brother and sister's mother at the same time.
Yeah.
So he was kind of, you know, in a situation where he was getting married to her and was dating my mother at the same time. So when she found out, she was like, wait a minute, you just had a kid. And he's like, yeah. And then a couple months later, he had me. And then a few months after that, he had another girl. And my mom eventually did the math, like, wait a minute, nigga, these babies is too close. Yeah. You can't keep saying we were going to break.
I don't even know how you could get out of something like that. Like, I have a son of my own, and God knows the stress of that. Like, if anyone who knows me knows how I stress over everything. Everything just pisses me off. It just pisses me the fuck up. I couldn't imagine juggling that many women, or any women for that matter. You know
what
I mean?
It's him. You know, that's where he came from. He grew up in a whorehouse. You know, he knew the gang. He knew the gang. My mother, she's from Columbus, Ohio, dude. So, and this is Columbus, Ohio from back in the day. This is, you know, Midwest. He's from the Midwest, so he knew how to talk to her and all that. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Come here, you know. Yeah, come on over here.
And he had celebrity, so I mean.
Yeah, exactly. And you know how that is. Fame changes people.
It does. So,
but at the same end, you know, my mother, when she had that kid, all that changed. She wasn't that young, fun, cute girl anymore. She had that baby. All that changed. She's like, nigga, this ain't gonna be that forever.
Yeah. So growing up in school, did you get any fame of your own by being known as Richard Pryor's son, or did that have any impact, or did you just have a regular, you know, childhood through school?
I grew up in the suburbs, so yeah. I mean, most of the kids, you know, you talk to, they really didn't understand who Richard Pryor was.
Yeah.
I did, like I said, like, I kind of grew up in a bubble, man.
Yeah.
It was kind of a weird life. It was weird because I had adults that would talk to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, about being Richard Pryor's son,
yeah.
and they understood how impactful it was, and they would try to, you know, come up to me and try to quote my dad's jokes to me as a kid,
yeah.
and it's the weirdest thing to have, like, a grown white man coming up to you and going, hey, come here, you know who Mudbone is, don't you? Huh? Yeah, with the penguin feet? I know, right? Yeah, don't let the white man hold you down, brother, huh? Yeah. Weird. That's right. I know about Richard Pryor, huh? With the strippers, huh? What? Huh? Oh, you're 8 years old? This is inappropriate. This is not appropriate to talk to you. You're 10. No, I'm sorry, kid. Sunday, I've had too much to drink. I gotta go.
Yeah, that's gotta be awkward. Yeah, it's.
Yeah.
I could imagine. What was the time when you decided to be a comedian? Take us through that. Like, I'm curious because comedy.
I dropped out of college.
Yeah.
And I had to do something to make my whole value seem worse. You know. I'm dropping out of school for what? Because my mom wasn't having it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was like, no, I'm gonna be a comedian. You know. And it was weird when I was a kid too. I remember when I was a little kid, I told my dad, I was like, Dad, I want to be a baseball player, you know, because he liked baseball. And he looked at me, and was like, yeah, all right, man, good luck. And I was like, no, what you mean, Dad? Like, you know, that's ridiculous. I don't need luck. I'm gonna be a baseball player. Yeah, all right. There's a lot of priors. Not one of us made it in sports, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And then I told my mom about, you know, college, like I was a teenager, man. I was like, Mom, I want to go to college and do this and do that. She was like, all right, yeah, good luck. Everybody kind of watched me, you know, when I was younger. I was always acting silly. I was always getting in trouble in the army. So everybody kind of knew what I was going to do. I was, you know, in school, even in grade school, teachers would have me give presentations and homework. I wouldn't have my homework done. I'd just be up there talking cash for 15, 20 minutes. Little did I know, I'm doing comedy shows.
Yeah, you're doing bits.
Yeah, so... I remember show and tell, man. I used to have to do show and tell. Teachers wouldn't even let me bring nothing. They would just make me get up in front of everybody and just talk to them. All these other kids is bringing stuff from home. Teacher's like, no, 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 you don't need that. Just go talk to them. You know what you're doing. Like, what? Doesn't make sense. I'm here to show you me talking? Like, no.
That's amazing, though. But were you able to do the math? Like, were you able to figure out the reason why those adults were kind of steering you in that direction?
Well, as a kid, you don't know. It's one thing, like, you know, for the Mannings, you know, their father's Archie Manning.
Yeah.
You know, I play football. We understand football. You know, you go out there, you throw the ball, you catch it, you play. For my dad being who my father was, people would tell me, your father's a comedian, but at the same time, I wasn't allowed to listen to his comedy because it's too grown and adult-like, and it's inappropriate for a child to listen to, but at the same time, they want me to be like him. So it's that whole thing of, like, as a child, they wanted me to, you know, make good decisions. But at the same time, they wanted to teach me how to do wrong. So I even, like, our DARE teacher, you know, she'd be like, don't do drugs, except for you, Mason. Here's a little bag of weed, you know. This is going to wake you up. You need to live life. You ain't got no baby mamas yet? What? I don't think this is okay. It was like I lived in a weird bubble, man. It was like even with, you know, living in the suburbs, I had like suburban neighbors and stuff. They would try to recreate having a like rough life and stuff. I'd have neighbors, you know, try to beat their wives in front of me, just like, yeah, I know you're used to this. No, this is not okay. You don't have to hit Miss Henderson. She's a nice lady.
Yeah, if you're going to choke her this way. It's a little bit more efficient.
But then you get older, and then you hear stuff like that. You see stuff like that, and then you hear, you know, you get older, and then you start studying studying my father and stuff and hearing some of the stuff he went through. And I'm like, oh, no, they were right. Yeah, this is every day for my life. It was kind of weird to learn, you know, all my family on that side, because I went to Peoria one time, did a comedy show out there.
Yeah.
And I had one of my cousins after the show. Somebody came up to me and was like, you know, oh, man, you're really funny, this and the third. We want to da-da-da-da. I had somebody come up to me. He's like, hey, man, be cool, man. You don't need to deal with none of these dudes. You don't need to deal with none of these dudes. I'm like, okay, who are you? I'm your cousin. Somebody yelled up. I was like, hey, Lil Pryor, hey, calm all that down. Dude was like, my bad. I was like, so what is this? He's like, man, you know, your dad made an entertainment, but we never stopped the game, man. We're going to take you out. These niggas took me out to about 4 clubs, got me drunker than I had ever been in my life. I woke up the next morning and forgot the show. He was like, what brings you here? I don't remember coming, to be honest.
Mm. Yeah, so going back to that, going back to coming up, were you ever introduced? Did your mother allow you to look at Rich's movies or listen to any of his albums, or did you have to keep that on the down low and kind of sneak like I did? I used to have to
sneak like everybody else. Sneak on YouTube, watch a couple clips here and there. But they let me watch his movies, just certain movies. You know, I was allowed to watch, you know, the silly movies like The Toy and stuff like that. Superman 3.
Yeah, because my introduction, like I saw. I saw everything. Like, my dad, he would straight up take me to the movies. You know what I mean? So I saw a car wash in the movies. I saw Silver Streak in the movies. Then I saw Blue Collar. Blue Collar blew my mind because they were working in the auto industry, and that was the first time I ever saw two people fucking in a movie. And I couldn't understand it as a child. You know what I mean?
Right.
To this day, I just saw two dark motherfuckers going at it, and I couldn't understand it, and they were wrapped up. As a child, that stuck with me well into my teens.
You don't even know, because you're a kid. You're like, what is this?
No, I couldn't understand it. I really couldn't. But it stuck with me to this day, so whenever I think about that film, that's the first image that pops in my... It's kind of weird, but it's just...
it's
weird how stuff processes. Yeah. It's just
especially when you're young.
Yeah, no, you don't understand, and I guess it's a reason, and that parents do keep stuff. But I never really, as raw as Richard was, I never, even now when you compare, like people now, they try to just be shocking, just outright, just for the sake of that. I don't know, for the sake of being shocking. Rich was more telling stories, and he was, you know, he was doing his bits and stuff, but it was almost. I can't even say almost. It was an art to it.
Yeah, but also he was telling stories about his life.
Yeah.
And that was such a big deal, especially back then, because he did a lot of stuff for a voice of a people that never had a voice for, you know. Even, you know, you look at how TV is in Hollywood, how they do people nowadays, they make every single young black man look like if he's in the hood, he must be a drug dealer or made some form of a bad decision to be in prison. It has no reason of why he's been through what he's been through and how he's had what he's had for the reason he's been put in that position. It's like with Rich, he would do movies and he would put situations like, you know, like the movie Car Wash, perfect example. You see him coming in being a pimp and all that, and you see all this and all that, but you watch that whole movie and you're like, there's more to it than just a bunch of black dudes, you know, talking shit the whole time. And that's something that has also been lost in this generation. We don't have any substance past what it is. It's not that, you know, y'all wasn't shooting and killing in the movie back then, but it's like, you know, y'all had a purpose. This person did something to you to make you want to shoot. Nowadays, it's like, yo, we gonna make a movie. We gotta get money. Scarface for black people. Shoot them up. Six. They're selling drugs in the hood. Yeah. Like, no, that's not enough.
No, I agree. We've talked about that on this podcast more than one time. Just what's out there, what's being green lit in Hollywood, and how we're depicted. I think I might have told the subject. I've traveled abroad a couple times, and I met a young man. I think he was from the Ukraine or somewhere. I can't remember where he's from, but we were on the airplane and we were traveling, and he tapped me. And we're just talking. He was going to New York, his first time coming to the country. And finally, he reached up the courage to say, is it true? And I was like, is what true? Is it true? And I was like, what? Is it true that all black people shoot themselves, kill each other? So he was worried. He was very concerned the way Hollywood portrays us because he had seen so many inner city films. And this is how they see us. And, you know, it blew my mind. I was speechless for a second. I was like, you know, of course I came back and said, no, that's an image that they're selling. The same thing in hip hop that you see when hip hop hasn't evolved since the 90s and everything's about money, hoes, and clothes. And, you know,
I don't understand how that made it nowadays, because all the rappers nowadays is pussy. Right. I don't get how these dudes nowadays walk around acting like thugs and gangsters, and you could tell these dudes ain't about that life. Like, you look at old school music, even like the whole Tupac and Biggie stuff. Biggie was a good 6+, like, height.
Yeah.
That man come up on stage, you could tell, yeah, he looks like he could whoop somebody's ass. Now you got rappers, a buck 35, 5'8", 5'4", talking about some, yeah, at any minute I'll shoot us up. Like, come on, man, you ain't tough.
Yeah, believe me, it's a sore spot for me. You don't even want to get this one started.
We can go there. Trust me. I went to a historically black school. I grew up around all white people, so I got all levels of a lot of stuff. I've experienced a lot. Even with me going to Hollywood, I got mad good treatment from, like, people as far as, you know, avenue of comedy, as long as I was funny enough. You know, you got to still earn that. But, you know, they opened their arms to me. But then when Hollywood came around, they still wanted me. Oh, that's Richard Pryor, and that's great. But then they still wanted to typecast me like the rest of the black cast, you know, members, that we all get the same thing. You know, my big break was I did an audition for a crackhead. But I didn't get the crackhead. I got the drug-dealing kid in the film. So
What film is this?
The film was, I don't know if it's even been released yet, so. I'm not even going to say it because I don't want to put nobody out there like that because, you know, if it doesn't get released, I don't have to claim it.
Got you. You have an interest in doing more films?
Of course. I still act. But yeah. A lot different now. I don't just necessarily just do auditions for any old kind of thing like I used to. I do my research. Who's the directors? Who's the casting? Who's the people putting it together? What is the work they've done before? You know, because at the same time, you know, with my brand, as far as, you know, being attached to being Richard Pryor, as much as I want to isolate myself, it will never happen. I will always be Richard Pryor's son. So I feel like in a rush at a young age as 26, trying to make it, I can make a lot of mistakes that any other comedian or entertainer would make. But because of who my father is, I don't have to. As long as I take the time and be patient enough, I can get the right film. And because of that comedy stuff, it's opened up a lot of other opportunities. I'm getting a lot of opportunities from other people coming up to me personally, telling me about scripts and things like that. And it changes how I can choose what I'm going to be in versus, you know, just having the blessing of who the father name is, because other people don't have that.
Mm, that's really smart.
What do you, so Hollywood has received you, you know, with open arms.
Yes, of course. But they open, it's like, you know how somebody will invite you in, like the drug game.
Yeah.
We love you like a brother.
Yeah.
And yet I'm giving you drugs and I'm literally giving you the destruction of your life. But I swear I love you. Hollywood will open your arms to you just like anybody else if they feel you're talented enough. But then at the same time, if you're not managed correctly or you have the right people in your ear, they'll just put you in anything just to make their money. And then your career will be all over the place, you know? And then they'll use you up and cast you out and get a new you. Because Richard got plenty other kids, so they don't need me.
Yeah. So how many? How has that process been in the comedy world? Because I know in the comedy world, you not to
completely flipped.
Yeah, yeah. In the comedy world, you're working. I assume you're working under the shadow of your father. And how has that been received? And what type of pressure? I mean, is there any pressure that comes along with that?
You get that pressure, right? And it's magnificent to watch people look at me as far as who I am when I walk on stage, because people, when I'm not on stage, I don't walk around acting like, you know, I'm somebody. I just chill. I live my life like an average person. So to be able to walk up and watch how people will look at you while you're on stage, and then even higher than that because of who my father is and the level that people hold me as far as regards. But it was more stressful as far as, you know, the impact of that when I was younger, when I first started doing comedy, because I wasn't at that level yet. Now that I've been doing comedy 6 years, you get your comedy set, you get all that. So now it's Richard Pryor's son, and then I just keep performing and producing my comedy. And then, you know, that thing gradually comes from Richard Pryor's son, Richard Pryor, Mason Pryor, Mason Pryor, Mason.
Yeah, because it's an evolution, and you at some point, because there's very little, and I said this in the opening of the show, I don't have much on, you know, it didn't have much history on you. There's very little out there on the internet.
That's on purpose.
Yeah, and that's smart.
Yeah.
That's
yes,
smart,
sir.
Because one of the things that I know about comedy, I kind of consider myself a student of comedy, but trust me, I'm no comedian. But, you know, I watch it with a close eye and I study it, is that you'd be foolish to put your bits and acts on the internet, because if you put your act out there and they see it,
and all that,
yeah.
It doesn't make any money.
But I do see it where it's profitable or it's helpful. You know, far as the outlets of social media, have you embraced that side of it?
I'm starting to now, the older I get.
Yeah.
When I first started, I used Twitter, to be honest with you, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram like any other young person. Who's the cute girls I'm trying to find, you know?
Yeah.
But when I moved out to L.A. and I watched some of these entertainers that would look at me and show up in a Honda, you know, not really having the most money in the world. Not saying, you know, I have every dollar on the planet, because I don't, but it's just you watch these people with these social medias with these followers of 12, 14, 15, 16,000 people. They don't have to have all these elaborate things in life. They walk up and that's who they are, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Mr. 10,000 followers, and that's their thing. And it's also a good thing when you go to a city, let's say I just came to right now, Washington, D.C. If I could just put on Twitter right now, oh, show here, you know, address and date, people are going to be on it. But if I don't have that same amount of followers, it's a little different. And also it's easier to get things going as far as, you know, shopping me around. My brand, If I call you right now and tell you, oh, Richard Pryor's son, Mace Pryor's coming to D.C., we're going to put this together. If you go to my social media page, it's the first thing you're going to do. You're going to research and see who I am. And I have just enough now that it's like you see it and you see what it is as a viable product versus before it was just like, who is this guy? Is he funny? And is he really a performer?
Yeah, and to your point, it's true. I mean, everything that I've studied, you take Kevin Hart, you take any of the comedians, some of the
great
ones.
Great at marketing.
Yeah,
Kevin
yeah.
Hart is phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's a couple other cats that I follow, like Joe Rogan, Bill Burr. Those guys, you know, they just send out they tweet it and, you know, 400 people to, you know, come and they're sold out, you know, they're done.
Yeah.
Unless they're doing theaters or something like that, where it's 1200 or 2500 people, but they're knocking it out of the ballpark. Yeah. Kevin Hart's on a totally different level. I mean, he's blown up and,
it's funny cause he didn't come up through the comedy ranks. He did not come up through the comedy ranks. He came out there, he was doing his stuff in Philly. He got enough out there in L.A. He got the right connect here, got the right connect there. But outside of L.A., like in Hollywood, money is really what backed him. The whole Shaq All-Star Presents, that's just him.
Yeah.
That's him getting in front of the right people to really even get somebody to invest money outside of comedy that doesn't even know comedy like that, to get them to put you on like that, that's miraculous. Like when I met him, it was kind of funny because I'm looking at him. Like, you know, like with this, like, nigga, you are Kevin Hart. Do you know what you've done? And he's looking at me like, you're Richard Pryor's son. Like, you know who you are. And it's, you know, but I mean, man, to do what he's done is, I don't think people understand the impact of that because I've been doing comedy for a while. And it's not like what I thought it was when I first did it. I thought it was going to be first. You know, you go out there and it's, you know, who's the funniest, and you have to be the funniest. And then on top of that, it's also a market as far as, you know, people likability-wise, you know, who do we want to look at, you know? And you know that's unfortunate, but people give you 30 seconds, and they'll give you the up-down test, and they'll tell you if they like what they see or not. So you got to work against that or for that. But with him, he went around all that and just impressed the right people that invested in him and marketed his brand. He didn't try to grab each and every single person to bring them together. Like a lot of other people tell us before that, you know, and I'm still, like I said, I'm learning myself how to get that. Because I've met even, you know, somebody like a Russell Simmons. He had me in there at his home. I'm talking to him, talking to another comedian on the internet, Spoken Reason. And he's big on social media, and he's trying to take his brand to, like, Hollywood. And just watching how this man is bringing all these people that do something together and then putting us together and really seeing what is basically being created. And that was magnificent to me to watch that and just learning this game, man, every day, just learning this game.
Well, it's smart listening to you talk. It's smart that you recognize that what you're putting together is a brand, and you're building that brand. And how you market yourself, how you present yourself, and you know that time is essential when it comes to presenting that brand. And you don't have a lot of time, like you said, in 30 seconds, they may have made their decision. And you know, and the fact that you're, I think that, you know, a big ups to you that you're able to recognize that and, you know, put that plan forward, because so many people, like you said, they go through and they just think comedy is about just killing that night. And then going back out, hitting the stage and trying to kill again. But it takes a lot of time, a lot of efforts. You're not always going to kill. I'm sure you've had some ups and downs on stage. You know, it is.
I've seen every single comedian that anybody would say is a big deal nowadays. When I was out there in L.A., I've been out there like on and off for the last 3 years. I've met every single one of them, and I've seen them all do comedy. And the amount of comedians that do comedy on a consistent basis and kill compared to the ones that made it and do subpar until that big show is amazing. And that's another thing some comedians really pulled me aside and told me. It's not trying to impress every big show, because everybody wants to press this. You have to do great every single show. It's almost like a regular night for these people that's like game night for them. These other people, they look at it as practice. I don't have to come to practice Monday through Friday hardcore. I got to perform on Sunday when the game is on. And you look at a lot of comedians, like even with Kevin, I saw him work on the same set twice, And people, like, you know, in that one club, like, oh, man, we saw that before. But what they don't know is that he's going to go to another city and record an entire special for an hour, and people are going to lose their mind and be like, how is he so good? Because he's been practicing on that same routine. I watch other comedians. They can produce routines, you know, in and out every week. They can come up with a brand new 30-minute set, and it's funny, and you'll enjoy it, but it has no substance to it because it's 1 week of material. I, even myself, I have notebooks, entire notebooks full of one routine for 20 minutes. And it's, you know, putting all that into one thing versus trying to spread yourself thin. Because if you go up every night, you know, I can go do comedy. Like, I'm in Houston right now. I can go do a comedy show every night, 2-3 shows a night. Now, if I'm trying to perform those shows for each and every crowd differently, trying to, you know, hey, I'm Rich Price, look at me go. And just entertaining those people, that's great. But then I'll go out and do another show, and Shaq will be there trying to, you know, recruit for All-Star. I better have a routine that's not just decent for that night, that he looks at and sees as a viable product.
So you don't have an issue of you know, being, quote-unquote, Richard Pryor's son and performing?
I have no issue with people correlating me with my father. I have an issue with people trying to make me recreate Richard Pryor.
Gotcha.
I purposely, like, you know, even, you know, talking to me right now, you can kind of hear how I sound kind of like my father.
Yeah.
But I don't try to bleed into that. You know, I don't want to try to become the next Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing is, you know, even when my dad talked to me when I was a kid, he always pressed that on me. Be yourself. Be whoever you're going to be. Because, you know, he was, you know, older anyway. So I wasn't by the time he passed away, I was still in high school. So there really wasn't, like, a whole lot of, Dad, I want to be a comedian when I was a kid, that made him be like, oh, great. You know, he kind of, I was an athlete when I was a little kid. So he always liked that about me, to be myself. And so when I started doing this industry, it made me focus more on being myself. But I'll still use his material and things like that. I'll still, you know, say things in reference to that, because it's a spit in his face for all the culmination, all the work he's done to get to where he is, to not address it.
Yeah.
But I can't use his struggle for nowadays. I can't talk about the white man holding us down the same way.
No. Yeah, it's definitely a different time now. Yeah, you mentioned, when you just mentioned that, just listening to you, one of the things that it struck me when I saw you, just one of the few videos that's online, was just a basic one-on-one interview you were doing. And you weren't doing a routine. One of the things that I came over and I talked to Miriam, I was like, oh, my God, you know, Mason Pryor. I was like, he's, you know, you've got charisma. You have the charm. Yes, do you sound like your dad? Yes. Do you look like your father? Absolutely. But there's something else you've got to have, and you really can't teach that. Either you have that, you know, that in your inner self, or you don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not gonna, it's not something that's learned, and that's what I picked up on you. And Miriam, you remember when I said, I totally do.
You're like, he's got that kind of magic.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, just listening to an interview, I was like, no, there's not going to be any jokes there. But just, you listen to him talk, you can tell it's there's some substance there, quite a bit. And that's,
yes,
what,
sir, thank you.
Yeah, that, well, that's made me reach out and see if we could get something going, because, you know, that's what intrigues me, that's what I find fascinating, and that's what I think is missing from the arts today, is that soul.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That soul. There's a lot of cool beats and movies with a lot of explosions and CGI, but it ain't got the soul. It doesn't have, you know.
Yeah, because like you said, with the art, there's no art anymore.
Yeah.
But if you think of comedy, how they brand it right now, you do a show, you release it, you shopping around, you release it. Then you do a new set that next year. For 1 year, you work on that next routine, so that same year, you come back with another routine. And you look at comedy that used to be back in the day, like the Godfather of comedy, which I look at as like people like relics that are still living, like Bill Cosby or Paul Mooney.
Paul Mooney, he worked with your dad and collaborated, didn't he?
Yeah, he did all the time. I just did a show with Paul Mooney about a half a year ago, man.
Brilliant.
And it's just, you watch comedians like that, and it's kind of impactful because Bill's coming out. We just recently came out with some comedy. And before that, it had been years. Chris Rock, still doing comedy, hasn't come out with years with something yet, because he's trying to create this art. And people are not artists anymore. They're performers. They're just entertainers. So they're just coming up with this brand, and they're marketing it just as that. Like, hey, this is entertaining enough. You won't have any substance with it. You won't walk away holding anything with it. You know, Hollywood right now with even scripts, most of the scripts right now are what they call templates, or not templates, but like basically like each script you get has to format just like a script before it. And there's pretty much four or five scripts that they say right now are the same movies just recycled.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to market that way. There's no creativity because there's no artist in front of this. They've stripped it and made it entirely into a business. And that's why you have somebody like me that you can see more things on me trying to show you substance versus just, you know, let's be honest, tap dancing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no.
Because at any minute I can be funny. Anybody can be funny at that moment. But what's more than that? You know, what makes something just funny to hilarious? If I say, hey, knock, knock, who's there? Laugh, laugh. That's one thing. But if I say, hey, man, you remind me of somebody that did this thing, and that's just like how my grandma did, and you get that into your, like, oh, that is like my grandma, and you feel that inside, that yeah. impact to the, yeah. like something, it takes it to the next level.
Yeah,
it's,
people it stays with you. It stays with you. And so right now you're touring, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, because
I have about 3 or 4 tours going on right now.
That leads me to the next question, the article that I read about your Sons of Comedy tour.
Yeah, that was actually under him, Brando Murphy, with his tour. That actually is kind of hectic because apparently Eddie Murphy is denying that Brando Murphy is his son.
So what this is for the listeners listening, there was, I guess it's still ongoing, the tour called the Sons of Comedy Tour, which pretty is self-explanatory.
Correct.
It's the sons of famous comedians touring around. And that's I think that was the link that I clicked on, and there's controversy surrounding it because, of course, we know Mason. Mason is Richard Pryor's son. There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
But another comedian is Brando Murphy. I guess Eddie is more than pissed.
Suing him right now.
Yeah, suing him because he's using his name, saying he's his father. I don't know much about him or the controversy. Why don't you tell us, you know, about the controversy?
I mean, on both sides, all I'm legally allowed to say is really just both sides or both parties' argument. On Eddie Murphy's side, his argument is that this man is a complete, total fraud and an imposter, and he has, like, sued him for, you know, basically using his name and likeness. And the whole swirl around of that is that he changed his name and got, plastic surgery to look more like Eddie. Or on the other end of Brando's side, he's countersuing because he's basically denying him, and he is his son, but there's basically an issue where he's just basically trying to just shun his son.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those out-of-wedlock situations.
Couldn't there just be a DNA test and get, you know, right down to it?
Well, sure.
Yeah. So they're just going to...
think about it this way. Whether one is right or the other is right.
Yeah.
Whoever is right. There's one that is right. But the other, do you think that they're going to want to do the DNA test?
Yeah, now it's gone too far where it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I don't know.
It's a lot to lose, too, because you look at it like on Brando's situation. If he's really not Eddie's son, he loses everything that he's ever done that's any form of credibility, and that's his entire life and craft and livelihood erased, eradicated in one moment. So if he's not, all the more reason why he wouldn't. On the other end, if it's Eddie and he knows he has history with that child's mother,
yeah,
and he may or may not be his son, why would he risk giving him that test? Because then he knows he has to pay all that back child support. He has to then pay out a sum of an X amount of dollars because he got countersued over it. Then he has to, you know, backtrack everything he said and go back out in L.A. and oops, and my bad, and you know, so... Whether that will actually happen or not, I don't know.
It's crazy. We'll see. It's crazy when things get to that point, just because at the end of the day, I think a kid just wants his dad. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird when money and fame and fortune and, you know, or what you think that means in life. But at the end of the day, I think a kid just wants his dad or wants to carry on his dad's name and legacy and,
exactly,
and try to do right by his parents.
Exactly.
It's kind of weird that we get so caught up where we lose ourselves, and then we get so stubborn that it gets to this point, and, you know, it's like, you know, what's going on with the world? It just makes me think sometimes. I mean, I don't know I don't know Brando. I really don't know Eddie, just outside of his career. And, and you know, it's just kind of mind-boggling when I haven't really thought about it. But now that listening to you talk about it, it's just kind of weird. I only saw one clip on Brando, and he seems like a very, you know, high, energetic. He seems like a talented comedian.
I mean, yeah, he does his thing. You know, I'm not, you know, yeah.
Yeah, he seems like that. And that being said, if he's a talented comedian, I mean, why wouldn't he just take your route? You know, if he has a dad, yeah, I got a dad. This is my dad. But yet, this is who I am.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know what? Honestly, man, if it is or isn't, I don't know. But I know for me, when I was a child, like, perfect example, it was almost like I had to be convinced that he was my father once I started to really understand who my father really was.
Yeah.
And that's a blessing that I had with my dad, is he never denied his children. He never tried. If it came down to, like, him being with a woman, if he chose a woman, his mentality was like, you take care of it. You know, that old mentality. Once I choose her, that's mine. Like, she can get another man. She can go here. She can go there. I'm taking care of her. He had multiple women. Even when he wasn't with them, he was taking care of others. So he always was that mentality, like, if you're mine, you're mine. I'll take care of it. I'll foot the bill. It doesn't matter. It's nothing. So because of that, it was always a thing of, like, are you my father? Like, yeah, I'm your father. You don't believe me? Come. Like, come to LA. I remember as a child calling him on the phone and was like, I don't, you know, and it wasn't like, I don't think you're my father. It was just like, I don't, you know, feel a certain connection, like, as you as my father. Like, you're all the way out in LA. I'm over here in Columbus. And he said, all right, fine. Forget school this week. Come fly to LA right now. I will get you a flight today. Come to LA. Come see me. You are my son. And he was married to another woman, but this is, again, Richard Pryor. He told her, shut her mouth. My other family's coming to visit for a week, and you're just going to sit there and stomach it. But there's different mentalities, you know? That's rich. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's rich. That's about as real as it gets.
Yeah. I mean, and what was she going to do? The other woman, she was in the same, I don't want to mess this up.
But that's got to.
I don't want to fuck all this up. This is nice. I like this. Look at these chandeliers. These are nice. And even when I was a kid, I remember talking to my mom about that. And she always told me on both ends, you know, being, you know, a small town woman, she always wanted to put these values of really important family values in me, because she knew when I got older, I would see kind of how my father lived his life. And she didn't want that type of life for me.
Yeah, that's good.
But at the same time, I get it now, especially being a man. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, I bet you do. But that's got to feel good, too, that your dad would, you know, put his family first,
yes,
no matter, you know, at all cost.
Yeah.
No matter
especially
what was going
on. He never allowed, and that was something weird for us to learn when we were children, he never allowed the drama between the mothers to stop his connection with his children.
God damn
it. Like, it was a level of also kind of really just selfishness and, you know, knowing your own power.
Yeah.
Knowing that no matter what he did, people wasn't going to stay away for too long, you know. Like, even with my mother, he was with her. They just got back from a vacation, and she's talking about, I think I'm pregnant. And he's like, well, I don't know what to tell you. Keep it, but I'm about to get married, so.
Yeah. And that's a testament to your mother too, to have to deal with that. But not only that, to bring you up, to raise you as the independent, strong man that you've become.
She did a great job,
yes, sir. And still not badmouth my father for who
that's,
he is.
That's where I was going to get to. Yeah, what impact and how did she influence you growing up?
She always wanted me to know that. She loved my father. My father loved her. And she always reminded me of that moment was that moment. And that her life was his life for that moment. And it's really weird to explain, but, like, she's not the only person who heard that. Even you talk of, like, how Pam Grier, she spoke when she was with Richard. It's like when you got in his world, it was like nothing else mattered. Like,
yeah.
His magnitude of what he meant to people was so much more. So it was for her, she was like, I met him, and he showed me this world, and I became a part of it until I couldn't be a part of it anymore. And then she left. But he always had that open door for her, like, anytime you want to come back, come on. But when you come back, know what you're coming back to.
And that says a lot.
change.
Yeah, yeah, but that's smart. It's very smart of your mother to know not to you know get involved or fall for that world, because some women they'll want the diamonds, the gold, the cars, the fast life,
yes,
the drugs and stuff like that. They don't care. They'll just be a part of it until everything comes down. And for her to remain strong and stay rooted.
And I don't want to say just my mother, because yeah. I want to say that it wasn't just my mother. He was very good at choosing good women, and I don't know how he tricked them. Because you look at all of us, you know, there's a few of us that have had alcohol issues or some like type of thing like that. But outside of that, you've never really heard prior kids on a like cocaine binge or getting put in prison for anything like that. So he always knew the right women to choose. So all of us, like even now, like all of his kids, you know, and there's six, possibly eight or nine. We all converse. We're all on each other's social medias. We can hit each other up whenever. We all have love for each other. Now, our parents, the mothers, that's Royal Rumble, just to be honest with you. But the kids, man, we're all, you know, we all kind of had that same type of stuff. But he was that way, you know, lived in L.A. and all that. But he's from Peoria. He always had that small city mentality himself. So he created a world, lived that world himself, but he always wanted that world he was raised in outside of all that. But, you know, what are you going to do, turn your back on being Richard Pryor?
No, yeah, that's you can't. But yeah, back to what you were saying though, it's I've never heard of any controversy surrounding the children.
No,
never. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't hear that. How have you been able to handle, you know, some of the pitfalls and the temptations of that lifestyle?
Well, technically, right now I'm on my fifth paternity situation. I have no kids yet.
Yeah.
I say yet because I'm dodging like Neo was dodging in Bullets and Matrix.
Yeah, slow motion.
I when it comes to like the party stuff, the whole party lifestyle really is weird. I was in Ohio when I drank, and everyone in Ohio was drinking, so I blended in with the teenagers and college kids. And then when I went to L.A., everybody that brought me around L.A. was like the club that really knew me as far as me as a performer. So they kind of kept me, you know, in the VIPs and the sections with other celebrities. So it's like I'm partying with those celebrities. And let's just be honest, Hollywood, the real Hollywood, that underground Hollywood, the way I party compared to the way they party, it's nowhere near. Like, I'll be honest with y'all, even on there, I smoke a little weed here and there. I'm maybe on a, I mean, and maybe. I mean, that girl's got to be super gorgeous to get me to drink something, because I'm not a real drinker, but. You go out there, you go to parties. I had somebody offer me liquid Molly before. I've had people offer me all kinds of stuff, man. And you're just sitting there, you know, in clubs like, man, you're really this porn star. How do you know? I just watched you. I just saw you 20 minutes ago. Like, I know you're that girl. I'm looking at you. And then they're like, you know, you want to do some coke off my ass cheeks? And I'm like, I'm going to go ahead and be that Jesus kid I was raised to be. So I'm going to have to miss out today. But, you know. Somebody else might take it, you know. So I've always kind of, you know, they like, I'm just weird, man. Even everything I've always done in my life has always embraced me and protected me. I've been blessed to have that situation from all avenues, because I've trust me, I've tried my best to get in trouble.
Yeah. I'd say keep doing, you know, walking the path that you're on, because like you said, I know Hollywood, and I've spent a fair amount of time out there. And you know, I do what I have to do, and I'm back to the hotel. You know,
you got to do your work and then go.
Yeah.
I just did a show in Oakland, man, and I had a girlfriend, went out there, did a show, and some girl came up to my hotel room.
Yeah.
I don't have a girlfriend anymore. But I learned a lesson, you know, at the same time. I learned a lesson.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a lot of that, because, I mean, if people are around you and you're performing and they, you know, do the math, and Richard Pryor's son, their image of Rich is what they've seen in the movies and on the news and documentaries. I just watched the documentary, Omit the Logic. Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating. I mean, it just showed me.
Going to that premiere was insane. Meeting some of those people that knew my father back in the day, like some of the people like Cecil Brown from Oakland, he and I talked for a good long time about, you know, a lot of stuff about my father. And it's really fascinating to watch documentaries about my father, read books about my dad, and not just in, you know, the whole, you know, nice story of, oh, Richard was such a, like, the real stuff. Nah, forget all that extra stuff. Your dad was so much more than this. You know, you hear the stuff he did, you know, working with Black Panthers, or how he had ideas working with some of Jewish Hollywood to work together to do stuff, and, you know, just passing color barriers, doing comedy shows in Black and white clubs. You know, just the stuff that he did meant so much more to so many people in that time period is always good to hear, because it's a part of history.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know?
Yeah, it's history, and that's what, again, boggles my mind when people don't know their history, because it's an important part of history. And I've said this to Miriam on this show. I've said that there was a period. I grew up in the 70s and 80s and, you know, just went blank in the 90s. But it was
well,
a time.
That's because everybody was fucking there.
Yeah, but the 70s and 80s, it wasn't that cool to be Black. You know what I mean? It just wasn't. It was a funny. It could have just been me, but it was a funny period where if you weren't Michael Jackson, if you weren't Richard Pryor, if you weren't Bill Cosby, you know what I mean? It started to evolve in the 80s with hip hop, and then with the rise of hip hop and that leaking into the suburbs. Of course, it changed, and it changed everything the way we see. But
you're right. But even with the 90s, you look at the 90s, how they did media. They started in the 90s. They started having rap groups that were white boys. You know, Mark Wahlberg, Donnie Wahlberg used to do music. Then you also talk about music, how the music videos started becoming really, really late 80s, but really 90s took it to another level with the whole MTV started in the late 80s, but then VH1 with the 90s and everything, where it wasn't just, this is for the Blacks, these are for the whites. It was like, you know, TLC, that group in the 90s, that was anyways like that group. And you start doing that, media changes people because of their image. If you have a little white girl in the suburbs trying her best to want to be this Black person, then that has to change the image of who this Black person is. They can't be associated with niggas as quote-unquote a nigga, what the white people see as a nigga. Because if I do that, then little Susan will want to trap. Little Susan will want to strip. Little Susan will want to sell drugs and be this type of, you know, so they don't want that. So we're going to make these entertainers nowadays, you know, more safe. You look at groups like Destiny's Child, how big they are and how clean their performances are. Even though Beyonce will go do her little booty shake and stuff like that, they'll still be so, it's a safer thing. Like, we're so much nicer. And on the other end, it was for white people, they had to get a little edgier. You know, to show that they can get a little gutter, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We live in the hood, too. And it changed because of that. You know, I came up, you know, I was born in 86, so I was raised up in that whole 90s era and Ushers and early thousands and all that. And
yeah.
Pretty much for me, everything that's media-wise was Britney Spears, Usher, you know, the boy bands, groups, Eminems. You know, it wasn't the N.W.A.'s, you know, the impact that they had, saying the stuff that they had. It wasn't about Ice-T and talking about some cop killer and the impact of what that was. It was more about make love, teenagers, you know, let's all come together and just enjoy life.
A lot of high fives.
Yeah.
A lot of
yeah,
high
exactly.
fives.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Yeah.
I can't get mad because, we, you know, hey, this is the air to get laid, and I got lots of it, so... I ain't gonna complain. Don't get me wrong. I love Ginuwine.
I'm envious of you in that
ride
that part.
Right.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I feel you. And but what I like about that, everything you just said, was the fact that not only do you understand, where you came from, the era you were raised in, you came up in, but you also made the effort to know the history. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Sir.
You took that effort, and you I'm going to dig a little deeper and see what else, you know, came before me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, is there...
Even with my father, man,
yeah.
It's a fascinating thing, because you like history. You know why my dad became who he is, like, known as Richard Pryor, before he was ever really Richard Pryor? You know that history-wise, a comedy, really, it was Bill Cosby was the number one.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
you know,
Bill.
And then you hear Dick Gregory was out back then, and he didn't cuss.
Yep. No,
you know,
yeah,
and
true.
You look at, you know, so you look at those type of comedians that are blazing the trails, and then Richard Pryor, instead of going on world tours, he stayed in Vegas. He got booked in Vegas, basically being the other Bill Cosby.
Yeah, and even
until one day he just snapped and went to Oakland, and that's when he came back being like, this is who I am, raw, flat out Richard Pryor. But it had to start with being, you know, back in the day, you know, that whole being black as an entertainer came from before the 60s, was the 50s and the 40s and 30s. It's like, you know, the whole black face, tap dance, shoe shining. So even when they came up, it was like, well, we're not in that era anymore, but we still better not offend too many people. And then Rich, to be who he is, be like, yeah, I don't care about these barriers, and picked up that standard of what it is and took it to the next level.
Yeah, they were the leaders. And again, I've said that this in my podcast. I was like, we had Jesus on our wall, Martin Luther King on our wall, Michael mm-hmm. Jackson. And like I said, right up there in the records, we had Richard. I mean, we didn't have a lot in the 70s. Didn't have a lot. And they gave us hope. You know what I mean? They gave
yes,
us
sir.
Vision. They gave us life.
We can do this.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't have to just do these two or three different things.
And the beauty of that is, Mason, is that it evolved. It evolved into hip-hop. It evolved into Barack Obama. It's mm-hmm. evolving now, and we're all evolving. And, I'm excited. I can't wait until the next thing. And again, that's what led me to you. I saw you, and I was like, this is the guy. This is the guy. I mean, I can't explain it any more than that. The fact, just from watching on one conversation, you know, I could feel that soul. I could see that magic. Again, I haven't seen you perform. Just based on this conversation alone, not even worried about that. You know what I mean? I'm not even worried about that. It's something that you can tell that the roots are there. And would I be looking to see you do Richard's act? No. But at the same time, the whole point of me having this podcast, because I want to know what makes you tick, and you've defined it. You've more than defined it. Wouldn't you say so, Miriam?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've defined it. I mean, hats off to you. Hats off to your mom. Definitely, you know, hats off to your dad and everything that they did, because I believe this, as I'm going to say this, you know, they've created a wonderful human being.
Yeah.
And we're definitely going to watch you. And you know, I'm excited. It sounds like that Hollywood has embraced you. It sounds like you know, you've got your head on right, and the comic world has embraced you. Have you got any negative feedback from, you know, any other comedians or anything like that? Any jealousy or anything like that?
I mean, I take that type of stuff with a grain of salt.
It's just competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And because I have a background playing sports, I know that type of competitive air. And at the end of the day, you, if you played sports as well, I would assume, so I saw your picture, you look like you still work out. So you kind of know, you know, even if you didn't, you know, just man to man, if a man walks up to you and tries to intimidate you, there's certain things a man will do to try to check another man.
Yeah.
We'll talk about your money, try to steal your woman, or diminish you in certain type of ways. And for me, when I have other comedians come at me, I see them as like, usually they're older comedians that are grown, that got kids, not my age, but close to my age, and they're scrambling to try to get opportunities that are handed to me. And they feel that they have to start cheating or trying to like attack me as if I've done wrong because I'm in a place that they spent their whole life trying to get to, and I've gotten there in 2 to 3 years. So I take that, you know, relatively kind of how that is. You know, I had, perfect example, when Mike Epps flew me out for his show, Mike Epps Presents,
mm-hmm.
and it was at the Nokia Center in L.A. Everybody was there. I mean, everybody. And there was another comedian that was in there that he was on the show, and he was walking around with this air like, yeah, I'm on the show. And outside of him, everybody else was just having a good time. Because Mike Epps, as everybody knows Mike, if you sit down and talk to Mike, Mike's one of the most realest people you'll ever meet in your life. So he runs his operation like that. He's in there. He's got me in the VIP with everybody else. We're talking. Everybody's having a wonderful time. And this one comedian is just walking around butthurt. And they were like, you know, just like, what's wrong with you, bro? And then I actually asked, like, you know, some questions to them. I was like, well, what would you guys say to other comedians young coming up and everything? And the camera's on and everything. And he turned on. He's like, quit. Just give up. Don't do nothing else. Y'all little niggas ain't going to get nowhere. Give me five. And he turned to his boy like, yeah. And his boy, like, he kind of slapped his hand. But it was kind of like he said that and then walked out like, yeah, I did it. But no one else left with him. Everyone turned to me and was like, well, forget that. You want to make sure you want to this, that, and the third. And it's like, it's dealing with that stuff to get to the real. You know, I had a show I did where Kevin Hart pulled me aside and talked to me. And really funny story, the show really wasn't that great that I did, but it really wasn't because it was a bad show. I just did something that offended the crowd that I didn't even notice at the time. And he pulled me aside himself. This is, you know, Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
And he came up and he's like, man, you want to make sure you do this. When you're talking to the crowd, you want to keep them here. And this, and it was like, I'm watching this dude tell me, and it's like, in my mind, I'm like, this is deep. This is deeper than all this other stuff. He doesn't know me personally. He doesn't care about me personally. He's doing something to me, for me, because of who my father was. So when I get the hatred, I feel the same way. It's not me. It's not me. People hate me because of the fact that it's like, you're Richard Pryor's son. F you. So I take it as, you know, referencing to that. Like, you know, okay, fine. You don't like me because of who my dad is. I apologize that your mother fucked a person that wasn't worth shit. Like, I'm sorry. Like, you know? Damn. There it is. You know? Sorry for you guys. Because it has nothing to do with me. You know, like, nothing to do with it. It's like, treating me like that is like, it's next to racism. Because of my skin tone or my parents, man, really, you going to hate me off of that alone? Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
I feel you. So what about some of the perks? Are there any perks that you indulge in? Yeah.
Oh, man. Sprinkle a coochie here. Big party there for free. Nah, you get biggest perks, I would say, honestly, truth, are when I go into a comedy club, I can always get up on stage if I tell them who I am.
Yeah.
That's a blessing. Because doing comedy, it's so hard because there's levels to it. And if you don't have that resume or that vouch, you don't get to that next level. And because of who I am, as long as, again, as long as my brand meets that standard, because it'll work 10 times worse as well. Because you watch a comedian that is nobody go up to a big show and tank, opening show, opening act. So what? It's an opening act. Whatever. He didn't do that good. So what? We're not even here for him. But if I go up there, it's Richard Pryor's son. You're not going to forget me. So if I have a bad show, it doesn't just linger. It lingers for, like, for months.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So as long as the show is up to par, then, you know, it's like, hey, I'm Richard Pryor's son. I'm just trying to get up to a couple of minutes here in this city. I'm trying to get my brand out there because I'm doing a couple of shows. Okay, cool. You're funny, right? Yeah. Go be funny. You go up there, you do your show, people laugh, they love you, they clap their hands, you did your thing, you leave. Let's say I don't have that. Hey, I'm trying to do my comedy, this and a third. Now, I could be the same hilarious comedian, but it's like, well, who are you? What have you done? Who's here with you? Who's vouching for you? Why would I put you up? And that's the stuff that hinders a lot of younger comedians is – you have to have somebody that has a name to say you're somebody.
Yeah, that's what's up. You, yeah. I mean, it's a real pleasure having. Actually, it's an honor having this conversation with you.
I'm enjoying this conversation, man. Yeah, it means nothing. If I am just me with all this information, it means nothing because all the information that I have was implemented in me. It was taught to me, and I just ingested it. I can't speak out to nobody. I can't jump up on the soapbox and be like, hey, guess what, guys? Look out. Like,
yeah.
I have to have people, you know, just like you, hitting me up, talking about, you know, we want to reach out to you and do this. And that's why I was so, you know, excited to do this because it's another avenue to talk to another amount of fan base. And, you know, this is also an experience. I'm doing your radio show and building another connection. You and I now know each other off of your show. If I'm in your city, hey, what are you doing? Come on out here. Cool. Because we know each other, I'm definitely not going to just call in. I'll be in D.C. I'm coming to do your show. And then that just helps the both of us. You know, it helps you build your brand. It helps me build my brand, and that's all it is, building that right stuff, man.
Yeah, that network. That network is very important. That leads me to this. When will you ever come to the D.C. market?
I will definitely be coming very soon. I have some shows going out in New York. I have another tour trying to be put together from Detroit in the Midwest, but it's going to be based out of Detroit, and then we're going to take it from Detroit to Ohio, Chicago, St. Louis, Indianapolis, all that. But right now, the reason I've been kind of leery about signing on the date is because you guys is on the East Coast. Y'all's weather has been so hard.
Now,
I don't care who you are. Yeah, it's you know, especially when you're not that person, it's very hard because, you know, I do my comedy. I know my brand. Men come out to see me because they want to see Little Richard. Women come out to see me to see Little Richard. And also, would they do me?
Yeah.
So when that happens, you know, just be honest. So then you get these women that come out, they're doing their hair, they're getting dressed up nice, they're looking nice, they got the cute dress on and stuff, because I'm 26, so I get that club age.
Yeah.
No one's sitting outside of a line for 45 minutes if it's 2 degrees. No, I don't care. I don't care who you are. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I complain about it every day. You said Detroit. When are you headed up to Detroit? Do you have a date on that yet?
We're looking at right now within 3 to 4 months. The actual Detroit show is actually already put together. They already bought the venue out and everything like that. Only thing is we're working on building that up so we can take that all through the Midwest. So I don't want to just jump up and say those dates because it's going to be more than just one city.
Where will the people find out this information? Is there a website or anything like that?
All social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. All my stuff is under Mason Pryor except for my Twitter. My Twitter is Mason_Pryor.
Okay. Yeah.
But if you still look me up as Mason Pryor on my Twitter, it goes to my fan page, which then goes to my page.
Got you. Yeah, it's important because part of this show will be broadcast in the Detroit area. So that's my stomping grounds.
Shouts out Detroit. Shouts out, you know. And also shouts out D.C. while we're playing games. I went out to Washington, D.C. one time for Madam Peebles, her funeral.
Yeah? When was this?
It had to be a couple years ago.
Yeah, it was a few.
Her church is over there by the Redskin Stadium.
Uh-huh.
The Peebles. Yeah. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar. You are?
I'm not, no.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I went to their funeral because a friend of mine, actually, he used to go to their church. Her name was Betty. That's what her name was.
Yeah, D.C. is a nice area. We're actually right outside of D.C., Northern Virginia, like maybe from here, about 20 minutes outside of D.C. So
ain't nothing wrong with the VA. My grandfather was from Virginia.
That's right. And, I come from not too far from you, Flint, Michigan. So we have an audience in Michigan, Detroit, and the D.C. area. But, so we can find you on social media and find out about more
Twitter
of those
and
dates.
Instagram.
And let's wrap it with this. I saw in an interview where you said you learned a lot of stuff from your dad. One of the more important things you learned was what not to do. Because as we know with Rich, you know, we talked about it. We hit some of the subjects today about the ups and downs. What are some of the stuff that you can take that you took away that you learned to do from him?
Work hard, be yourself.
Yeah.
Don't regret what you do if you know you thought about it before you did it.
Yeah.
He did that. I would watch. People don't know that my father thought a lot. He was a very deep thinker. But at the same time, because he was such a deep thinker, some things he just really ultimately was like, it doesn't matter in the long run. He was very good at seeing the long run of things. So he would make short term decisions that may not be the best, but he would spin it and make it turn out for the best in the long run, even like down to him, you know, catching himself on fire. That's a terrible thing to do. Why would you have done that? But then to come out with a comedy special because of that one joke, that's brilliant, you know?
Yeah.
So he's always been able to turn anything into whatever he wanted to do. He was something special, man. I think he had magic powers. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
for real.
Because,
you know, and you especially coming up in that era, you would know firsthand more than I would, because even everything that I can learn would just be things that was caught that is most relevant to basically be on the internet. You've seen things that may have been news at that time that just didn't make it, you know, so you'd know more than I would that really the life that he had.
Yeah, it was an interesting time, because I've talked about this on the show before. It was a time where you knew, especially as a black man growing up, you knew things were evolving. You didn't know at that time how fast, where now you can kind of gauge and you see things changing just because of social media and the 24-hour news cycle and the amount of information and technologies out there. Back in those days, it was very limited. So brothers would, and you know, to Rich's credit, would have to work their ass off to get things promoted and to get things made. Whereas now, if you want to make a film, you can put it out on Facebook, on Twitter. You can, you can produce a podcast and put it out there. It doesn't cost tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars, but you could see it. Yeah, you could see it back then. You could see the evolution, and your dad definitely played a big part in my life and all of our lives, just because, again, we didn't have to know him on a personal level, but I can't say it enough.
He was so personal with his comedy and his life. He wanted you to know that. That was on purpose, though. He wanted people to feel that connection to him. That's why he did a lot of the jokes that he did, even the voices he did. They were always people from the hood and everything, because he wanted you to remember that. Like, this is us. And not just for race, just people. Because really, all people in all ranges, if they live a certain experience, they will experience things. If this isn't you, this is somebody in your family. And he wanted people to remember that, because his life, all intents and purposes, once he made it, was good. You get a certain amount of money and fame, you just got to stay out of trouble. So he knew he couldn't relate with people, you know, on that end to come in and be like, man, you ever made a $10 million mistake? Huh? Give me five. So, but he just remembered where he came from, and he remembered to keep that frequency and that connection with people, just all kinds of people. And that, to me, was just insane, because I look back on it, to be able to say the stuff he did in that time period about white people and have them along with him, like, you're right, that is us, that's funny, because you only have that when you're one of us, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And he gave us hope. He gave us hope, and I think we all can always use that in our life. Would you ever resurrect any of his bits?
The closest things I do, I do a bit where I basically do the story of him being on fire, from my perspective of being in his nuts at the time, because it's just a funny thing, because it's like, you know, let's just be honest, like, you know, to experience that during that time period, and be like, you know, like, before you were born, your father tried to murder himself and ran a half a block on fire and lived. And then that's when I looked into that and was like, man, this is funny, because it's like, he tried to kill himself. It wasn't him that kept him alive. It was the other three kids in his nuts. You know, we were like, oh, no, nigga, you ain't just going to get rid of us. Hang on. All the stuff you've been through, we want to be born. No. You know, and I do that type of thing. And then I do another thing where it's like, you know, he talks about he had the pet monkey.
Yeah.
I do the, you know, perspective of, like, my dad bought me a pet monkey. And it was, you know, that type of stuff.
Miriam.
I had a monkey, too.
Miriam actually had a pet monkey.
You actually did have a pet monkey?
I did in West Africa.
Were you married to Michael Jackson? Like, who gets pet monkeys? What is this?
It's, you know, it's how you keep the kids busy in Africa when your dad's sick. You know, my mom wanted to distract us, so she's like, a monkey will do it. And it worked. I mean, we were very happy to come
home. Now, is it true what they say?
Huh? What?
Is it true what they say, monkeys are the most vile creatures on the planet?
Not this one, no.
See,
really? Because everybody I've ever talked to, they say monkeys don't do nothing but eat and fuck. Yeah. And throw poo.
Well, she had a different type of monkey. She didn't have like
tiny
the
one.
Chimpanzee. Hers looked like a ferret or something. It was like a furry really? Thing with a
it was
with a
little,
human
with
face.
A long tail. Yeah, it was one of those little. Tiny
it was a
ones.
Gerbil with a face of
yeah,
a man.
Yeah, that old man's face or something.
Yeah, it did kind of look like weird. A beard and stuff.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah. Keep that thing away from me. Mason's like me. You know what I mean? We don't want to be around no monkeys.
Right. He got this monkey walking around looking like my old uncle or something in the corner, just stroking his beard and stuff.
Yeah, with a brown bag, drinking something.
Right. This monkey looks like he has wisdom, though. I like this monkey.
Yeah. That monkey's got knowledge.
Come in the house, monkey talking to you. Let me tell you something, young stuff.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Quit stroking your beard, Bobo.
Yeah, go tell us a story about back in the day.
Yeah. I remember back in the time when we was back. Like, what? It was the same.
Oh, man.
I'm dying.
Yeah, I'm glad that came up. Mason Pryor, my man, thanks for joining us. Sir. We really appreciate it, man.
I had a wonderful time.
I tell you, your mom, I had a chance to speak with her for about 26 minutes and 40 seconds.
26
and,
minutes?
And
she didn't let you off the phone?
Yeah, yeah. Well, she wanted to make sure that her baby boy is going to be in good hands. So,
I mean, you know, let's talk real. You know, I'm not allowed to say certain things, but you go out to, you do a certain amount of level of anything, you know, people start to take interest in some organizations and groups are not things you want to be attached to.
That's all I can say with that. Yeah,
we're
good people. So and you guys are good people as well, and we applaud everything that you're doing. And I mean this when I said this to you, we just want the best for you, and we wish you nothing but success. And if there's anything that we can do, you know, if it's in our power, we're there for you.
Thank you. If there's anything I can do.
Oh, I'm going to be calling you for some tickets, motherfucker.
Not myself, but, you know, don't have me coming over there like, hey, man, my appliances started going bad, man. Could you bring your tool belt?
Can you come over and watch the monkey?
Right.
Now, Mason, thank you very much for joining the show. And
thank you guys for having me.
And you guys listening, be sure you follow Mason Pryor on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I'll post stuff on my site where to find him and links to that so we can get out and support you as you tour the country and blow up. So that's what.
Well, make sure you guys link me in on this the interview and everything so I can put it all on my social media stuff as well.
We'll do.
So my fans can come, you know, spill back onto you guys' side.
That's what's up. So we appreciate that. So we'll be back right after. Stay on the line, Mason. We'll be back right after these words.
They still do it by hand at Mr. B's.
Morning, Mr. B.
Morning, Snapper.
Only determination.
Got the big three.
Dedication. Yeah. And a tough crew of men can get the job done.
Stand and deliver, honey.
They've got a sharp boss who always has control of the situation. They've got teamwork. Most of all, they get the will to work.
I don't want you to leave here without realizing what I can do for your car.
Like what? Take over the payments for me?
This is the wet and wild world of the car wash, a business a man can be proud of.
I want to work with the men, Dad.
Where the only rule is, do it with style. It's hard work, because sooner or later, everyone comes through here.
Yeah, did you happen to see a big, tall, black, blonde chick here?
Big black, blonde
red
chick?
Boots.
Listen, I'd like to talk to someone and get some information about a social disease.
Hey, brothers, I'm here to unite with you.
Hey, baby, how you doing? Good, I'm glad to hear that.
Between the washing and the cleaning, there's always room for dreaming that the next car through might be the answer to your prayers.
Praise the Lord! Praise the Lord!
Well, praise this car, honey.
Thank you, miss.
But one thing is certain. When it comes to serving the public, these men will stop at nothing. George Carlin. Professor Irwin Corey, Ivan Dixon, Lorraine Gary, Jack Kehoe, the Pointer Sisters, Richard Pryor. They all come together at the fabulous, freewheeling Soapsuds and Emporium, where everything goes.
Boy, there's been some weird people in here today.
Car Wash.
All right, Miriam Tazi, what do you think? What do you think about that interview?
That was really good.
Wasn't he fun?
He has a really good head on his shoulders.
Smart dude.
Smart fan, huh? Like smart mom.
Grounded.
Smart, yeah.
Grounded. Like he talked salt a lot, of the
he,
earth.
He really touched on a lot of things that you and I have talked about on the podcast, which is really fascinating.
Yeah. And to be that age and to... It's one thing to be that... Imagine if you were that age and you come from... Or you have the name, you carry the name of someone who changed the game. Who just reached the pinnacle of comedy. I mean, you're not talking about just some movie star or some actor. You're talking Richard Pryor, and he doesn't seem like he's, you know, using that for self gain or that's his motivation. He's Mason Pryor. He wants to be Mason Pryor. He acknowledges and is proud of his history and his father, and he acknowledges that. But he's his own man, his own person.
Yeah, he handled that really well. I think it's just he's respectful and he's aware of it. But mm-hmm. He uses it to a certain extent, but it's very well balanced. It was just, and also they protected him from that a little bit from his childhood. Just everything, the whole story was just really
fascinating.
Really, really fascinating, and it made a lot of sense. And he's a great guy, so that was really cool.
Yeah, I saw you over there smiling, huh?
I was.
Look at you. You were taken.
I mean, I was.
Good night, Miriam Tazi.
All right, relax.
Jeez. Mason Pryor.
Like you weren't taken.
Yeah, I was. This was like a date for me.
I was nervous getting started. I'm like, I'm the third wheel here. These guys are having a moment.
Yeah, it was.
No, yeah, you guys have a lot of things in common in the way you think, too. So I could see how the conversation flow was really, yeah. really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I just kind of glanced over at any notes that I had because, I mean, he was hitting it. He was, yeah. I like that. Gives me faith in the youth. You know what I mean? You know, because you hear me complain, and your listeners, I know you guys have heard me complain many a time. I'm a complainer. That's what I do. I complain about a lot of stuff. The older I get, the more I complain. But, you know, you did not knowing what to expect because, again, I didn't know him, you know, a couple weeks ago. And I came to you and said, look at this video.
Yeah.
Look what I just stumbled on. Watch him. You know.
Yeah, but then I tried to look up stuff too, and I couldn't really find.
No. He's smart. Yeah. He is. He's very smart, and seems like he's very calculated. Mm-hmm. And he's evolving. He's going to evolve into the social media side of things, and his audience will evolve, and he will find that loyal base just because he's willing to do a show like this. I mean, I'm no one. We're just American Riddle. We do a podcast. You know what I mean? Here, there, anywhere, and we've, like I've always said, we're a small group, but we have a loyal following.
Yeah.
And the fact that they just said, you know what? Yeah, we'll do your show. You know what I mean?
Awesome.
Yeah, it shows how open he is, and he's, like I said, the salt of the earth. Like his dad, he knows his roots, knows his background, wants to stay associated, wants to stay close to that, doesn't want to deviate from that. Nothing but success can come from that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not overnight, and it sounds like he's willing to put the work in.
Too, so
he's funny,
helps.
Too. He's funny. You know what I mean? But it's natural. Too.
Yeah.
It's within the story.
Yeah.
And then it comes out. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Funny. So.
Like, to find a bit. Like, I thought he was going to say, yeah, I'd resurrect Mudbone or something. Something easy, something simple or something like that. You know what I mean? The safe or the quick and easy path. No. He's on fire and we're inside. You know what I mean? That's the genius. That's what's going on. And that's what you have to see. You know what I mean? That's what I saw in that clip that's on YouTube. You see it within the conversation.
Yeah.
And I would say, not that Hollywood is listening to this program, but I would say Hollywood or anyone outside of Hollywood that would invest into anything that he's involved with in any production would be out of their minds not to link up with this gentleman, this fellow, this brother, this comedian,
mm-hmm.
Because the and it could be I don't even think this is premature for me to say. The genius is there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's definite. That trait is there. It's not something that you can learn. It's not something that, you know, that you can go to school for. It's something that he was born with. And he's got that gift. Can you feel it?
Yeah, he's got timing. He's just got stories.
Savoir faire. How do you say it?
The know-how.
How do you say it?
That's pretty close, but, you know.
Say it. Let me hear it.
Savoir-faire.
Yeah. That's what you have, Mason Pryor.
Yeah.
That's right. So, yeah, I mean, I had a great time. We covered a lot of topics. We got to see things from his point of view. And not only that, his generation.
He's very open, too.
You know what I mean?
He's very open.
And the fact that he's so diverse. He can mix it up in the hood. He can mix it up in the burbs.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I saw in him. Because me experiencing that when I was growing up and where I'm at now, it's you have to be able to adjust. You know what I mean? You have to be able. Not only that, you have to be able to recognize. And he was fast. You know what I mean? Quick on it. Yeah, he's a thinker.
Yeah.
So
just like
yeah,
his dad.
I wish. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's easy for us as an audience to get caught up and just be like, oh, you know what I mean? Richard. But no, within after you. Lose that within the first few minutes, it's Mason Pryor.
He's his own person, for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I hope you guys had a good time. Miriam, I know you had a good time.
I'm still smiling. I can't stop.
Yeah, she's smitten.
A little bit.
She's taken.
A little bit.
Yeah, she's caught up.
I like funny men.
Yeah, she does. You know what I mean? So that's not a bad thing. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. Glad you guys were able to be a part of this. Definitely go to American Riddle on Facebook or Malcolm Riddle on Twitter, and I will shoot out the links so you can friend and find Mason to see where he's at. won't be at any cold destinations anytime soon. Brother doesn't like cold weather. You know what I mean? And he doesn't want you to be in the cold weather waiting in line for 45 minutes.
He wants
minutes.
To see you in a dress, though, too.
Yeah. He wants you to wear your, he wants you to come out.
And looking cute.
Yeah, look cute. So with that, we'll see you in the next show. Thanks again, Domino motherfucker.
You know, life is funny. If you don't repeat the actions of your own success, you won't be successful. You got to know your own formula, your own ingredients. What made you, you? 1987, I was at the Latin Quarters, listening to Africa Bambaataa give the order. The core of the order was to avoid the slaughter. He said record companies ain't got nothing for you without a lawyer. He taught the infinity lessons and how hip-hop could be a many a blessing, and that was great. So in 1988, there was no debate. We had to end the hate. The name of the game was stop the violence and unity, knowledge, and self-reliance. We started talking about Martin and Malcolm. Had these ghetto kids going, huh, what about them? 1989, Professor Griff speaks his mind, but his freedom of speech is declined. 1990 came with the West Coast. East Coast, West Coast, who is the best coast? Looking back now, of course it was bogus. The whole argument was, but we lost focus. We got hopeless, not with the lyrics and music, but with hip-hop and how we use